Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long for their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right, we need some help. We'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. It is always an honor to come to you this evening where we can speak to our underserved communities. This is Missing Pages of History, today's program, November 10th, 2018. Our theme for today is what's happening in our cities and communities. We'd like for you to dial in at 818-337-0016 to give your particularly your feedback on this particular thing and other issues that we'll be discussing today. Our outline for today includes, we'd like to raise with you a quote for the month, and we'd like each one of you who hear this program to send in your response to addressing the quote, what it means to you. And the one that we select for each month as the winner will receive a special gift prize for MPH. Our quote for this particular program is, "Can there be peace without justice? Can there be peace without justice?" We'd like for you to think about that and write in to us or email it to us. And you can do that by emailing Missing Pages of History 1 at yahoo.com or write it to MPH Inc. PO Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia 23261. We will select a winner and we'll make an announcement on the winner at next month's program. Now, let's begin with this program today. All the events, Israel, we have some, a little Black Men Facts from MPH. From the Black Men Facts, we will talk about some current events, our hot topics. And after that, we will discuss some selected articles of interest that we'd like to have your feedback on. What also, we have invited some guests where we're going to do a special segment on what's going on in our community and cities. And we'd like for you to join in during that segment as well to share with the listening audience what's going on with your, in your cities or communities. And like always, we'll close out our program with an update on what's happening with MPH. So that's the order for today at this point in time. We'd like to start this program all with some little Black Minute Facts. And to do this, we will bring to you Susie, who will share with you some of the Black Minute Facts that has been selected for today's program. Susie, welcome to Missing Pages of History.
Good evening. Well, the first little known Black History fact is the New Orleans strikes. New Orleans was the center of a pair of racially unified strikes that brought the city to a standstill and quality to the working class. After one strike in October, followed by another in November, it marked the first time Black and white workers carried out a strike together successfully. The so-called Triple Alliance, which comprised of the largely Black Teamsters, the Scalesmen, and the Packers, joined together on October 24, 1892 to strike and demand shorter work days, a pay increase, and a closed shop policy to hire union workers for union jobs. Around 2,000 to 3,000 workers walked off their jobs, and the local economy suffered. The city's Board of Trade resisted the strike and even threatened the use of militia to break up the strike. But since the strikers didn't feel the threats, the board finally agreed to sit down with the Scalesmen and the Packers, but not the Black Teamsters. The Triple Alliance would not accept those terms and maintain their demands, pushing the board and the city to use diversity tactics to sow dissent and fear among whites in the city and the union, but those efforts fell short. A general strike took place November the 8th with the assistance of other unions across various fields. This strike was far more damaging than the initial one and took place in October as electrical and transportation workers refused to show up for work and left the city in the dark. The governor and the board began reporting that Blacks were attacking white people in the street, which might have worked if the unions were split, but they remained a united front in spite of the opposition. After 3 days, the board relented to their demands, giving workers a raise, a 10-hour work day, but did not agree to the closed shop policy. Historians note that the racial harmony on display served the interests of whites as well as European immigrants were on equal footing with Black workers in the eyes of their elite and ruling class. Still, the strike showed that the collaboration between the groups could move the needle forward in the labor movement in America. The final thought, that's why white-wing anti-union politicians have tried to foster anonymity between poor whites and Blacks, especially since the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 1964. Which outlawed the evil Jim Crow empire. They succeeded mainly in weakening the labor movements as well as dubbing many low-income whites, especially in rural areas, to keep voting for them against their own interests. Example, a repeal of the Obamacare, which replaced it with something better as Trump promised. Those who are finally woke, we'll join the blue wave next month while the others remain, as Hillary correctly described. deplorable. And this is just this many fact is something that's still existing today, where they have problems with where they don't have as much union representation on the jobs as they did in the past. The next little known history fact is the Chicago School Board Card. The Chicago School Board Card of 1963, also known as Freedom Day, took place 55 years ago today. The protests involved some 200,000 students and tens of thousands of city residents united in solidarity. But it would almost take 20 years or so before the city acknowledged desegregation measures. Despite the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision, Brown versus Board of Education, Chicago maintained segregated schools well into the 60s. Segregation was norm when black Southerners migrated north, and schools were overcrowded as a result. Black schools in the city were so full, students had to take classes in hallways, and some didn't even get a full day of instruction. Chicago Public Schools Superintendent Benjamin Willis implemented what were known as Willis Wagons, mobile classrooms for black students in the overflowing classrooms, while white students had far superior tools and equipment in place. In response, Freedom Day was born and led by organizing efforts of the Coordinating Council of Community Organizations. School teacher and activist Alba Rabi, who worked along with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in segregation efforts, spearheaded the movement. While Freedom Day generated a lot of media attention, it did not achieve the goal of changing policy. The protests did inspire other such protests, including a walkout in Chicago and a public school boycott in New York City that dwarfed the 1963 protests. As experts noted that starting in 1907, white flight began to occur with families pulling their students out of Chicago public school system and moving to outer suburbs. The white student body in Chicago shrunk by as much as 75%, according to some reports. In 1980, a court-mandated desegregation plan was officially implemented, but it was more symbolic than anything else. Chicago's outer suburbs remain predominantly white. Experts say that Chicago is the most segregated public school system in the nation, and which exists today in 2018. And the last the known black history fact is the Jackson race riots. According to accounts, a white truck driver delivering cigarettes was parked on the 900 block of Florida Avenue. The area was the home of A. Philip Randolph and Zora Neale Hurston, who also known as a number of thriving businesses. Allegedly, a black man named Buck Riley was assumed to be breaking into the driver's vehicle, and while the white store owner handed the driver a gun, then shot Riley in the leg. Fleeing the scene and running into a crowd of black school children, the driver fired into the crowd, which angered onlookers who thought the act was malicious. A crowd gathered on Florida Avenue Strip, flipping the car over and then destroyed businesses and other buildings. Police attempted to quell the crowds but couldn't do so, but heavy rains kept much of the potential for violence at bay. In the end, 11 people were arrested and 10 charged. Riley and the driver also had their charges against them dropped. The East Side never fully recovered from the economic blow, but in 1995, the strip was renamed A. Philip Randolph Boulevard, and the beautification efforts came to the rein in 2003. Still, observers note that the area didn't get the same makeover as part of the downtown Jacksonville. Despite urban renewal plans, constantly being introduced, and that's the last of the many facts for 2018 October.
Susan, we'd like to thank you for sharing with the listening audience. and a little known black mini history facts as it relates to New Orleans strikes, Chicago public school boycott, and the Jacksonville race riots. You know, one thing about history we come to respect is that if you fail to learn the history, then you are doomed to repeat it again and again. And we think those mini facts are very timely as we begin to discuss what is currently going on today. But before we do that, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we'd like to have your input as we discuss current events or hot topics. And we will do this in about 2 minutes. Right now, we're going to pause for a station break, and we want you to think about if you had a choice of color, which one would you choose?
One, two, three, four. One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more
and love for our nation, would make a better society.
And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right?
I'd like to welcome you back to Missing Pages of History. Welcome to MPH Radio. As we last left, we gave you some little black mini facts, and really it was addressed and speaking to the social conditions historically in various cities from New Orleans to Chicago to Jacksonville, Florida. We will continue the discussion, but under the context of having a little bit of discussion around current events. And we'd like to have your feedback as well as your current events or your hot topics of today. Today we have chosen, on the hot topics, current events, the issue of, as of today, they are celebrating 100-year anniversary of the ending of World War I. And in the celebration, Donald Trump has flown over to Europe to meet with the various presidents of the European countries. Now, at this meeting, one of the presidents of a European country, that is France, he made a statement in which I'd like to get your response to. He made a statement to the European president that one, Europe should develop and all European army in defense of the possible wars with Russia, China, and even the U.S. Let me repeat that. He made a statement that Europe should develop an all European army in defense of possibly being able to defend itself against any kind of wars that may take place between Russia, China, and even the U.S. What do you think about the significance of that particular statement? As well as recently this past week, we recognized there was another mass shooting in California where 9 people lost their lives. Another mass shooting as well as another mass fire or fires throughout California where destroyed many, many homes and properties. And many people still say today they don't believe in global warming. Or if they were set, why don't we sell and hear anybody being caught for setting these fires? So when you look at these current events today, we'd like to know, what do y'all think? Feel free to call in at 818-337-0016. 818-337-0016. Hit 1 if you have any views or comments that you would like to make. This is the radio station of MPH. So right now, we're going to bring in caller 6029. Caller 6029. You have heard our many facts, and you have heard articles that we want to deal with in terms of hot topics and current events. What is your take on these various issues? 6029.
Yeah, well, in terms of the historical events, you know, when we talk about history, to adequately understand history, we have to understand those factors that preceded, you know, current history. And one of the things that's a consistent flow in history in terms of the oppression of people, the injustice inflicted upon people, the marginalization of people, and these characteristics continue to exist, you know, in the society. And one of the things that we've got to be very clear on is that there is no undermining these facts without a clear understanding of the role capitalism play in terms of, you know, uplifting, upholding, you know, these kind of destructive attributes, if you can call them that, in terms of as it confronts humanity. So I think that the struggle, you know, against these factors is something that we have to take very, very seriously. As the sister alluded to, she talked about the fact the role of unions, and she talked about people standing up to, you know, sort of this constant fight in terms of justice. And one of the things you have to understand is nobody's simply going to give you justice. So something that has to be earned. And until we understand that fundamental reality, I think there's a tendency for us to believe that, in fact, that someone will give it to us simply if we appease to their kind nature. But one of the problems that when we talk in the context of capitalism, capitalism has no conscience. And so to appeal to something that doesn't have a conscience seems to me to be counterproductive. I think in terms of what's happening in the community, I think one of the things we get very, very clear on, you know, there is seriously a great needing of funding, you know, for the cities. And because this funding is non-existent, because the government has made federal government has made a conscientious effort to ensure that these monies, you know, from the city does not flow to these cities find themselves in dire straits. In fact, one of the things the recent report indicated was that, you know, 80% of the municipalities in this country are at the minimum of $500 million in debt. And so, therefore, when you talk about that kind of indebtedness, you know, in society, the question is, what are you going to do, particularly in cities, for people who are marginalized, people who need housing, people need a shelter, people need a proper education? But clearly, the money is not forthcoming, and the government has made a conscientious effort to ensure that any help in terms of block grants to the states, to the cities, are being eliminated all the time. So clearly, it's creating a very disastrous situation for cities. And so I think that's one of the things that the people, you know, particularly who reside, you know, in these cities have to confront. Without some recognition in terms of, you know, the hardships that are coming, I don't think reasonably we can anticipate anybody forming any kind of ideas in terms of moving forward, because they simply don't understand the reality in terms of what's currently going on, particularly when it comes to funding, you know, from the federal level. And I'll close with that.
Okay. Okay, caller, we'll put you on the hold. We'll come back to you later. Let's take this caller 3330. Caller 330. Welcome to Missing Pages History, MPH Radio.
Thank you. And I'd like to reply to the comment made about the all-European army. Anytime you have a conglomerate of capitalist nations, when you talk about those that were the major players in World War One, you got to understand that the phrase, there's no such thing as permanent friends, only permanent interest, is should be one of the mantras of capitalism. And the reason that the French president made this comment is he understands that in terms of the global marketplace, in terms of capitalism, the U.S. is in competition with the European economies. And when you have a juggernaut like the U.S., you got to understand they're going to do what they can to maintain as much global influence as possible. So if you feel like you might not be strong enough individually to defeat your foe, you may need to form temporary alliances with other people that have similar ideals to stop that major obstacle. So clearly, that's why the French president conveyed such sentiment.
Okay, caller, anything else you'd like to say in terms of the recent mass shootings that have taken place throughout this country recently and the fires that are going on in California where many people don't believe there's no such thing as a global warming? What's your response to these particular current affairs?
In regards to the mass shootings, you got to understand that the conditions that create this kind of mentality. It's not something that just somebody just wakes up all of a sudden and decides to do this randomly like you often hear. It's the condition that creates this mentality. When you have a society that we have this obsessed with violence, obsessed with aggression, and you have a lot of people who are dealing with various forms of depression because of the conditions at play, it's not unusual that you see such a high occurrence of these things happening, whereas before they may have been a blip or they become more of a trend. So you got to understand until the conditions change, you're going to breed these kind of things happening. And in regards to what's happening in California, it's important that we really, not only do we need to do studies in regards to the climate, but we need to come up with policies that focus on that which sustains and that stuff that's only temporary. Because you know we spend so much money on focusing on that which is temporary because that makes money. But as we know, it's no money in making sure that things are healthy, but it's money when things are temporary. You can limit how much of the resources are dispersed, unfortunately.
All right, colleagues, thank you. We'll put you on a hold right now. We're going to take a quick station break. We're going to move into our next segment, what's going on in our cities and communities. We invite some guests around the country. They're going to share with you what's going on in their cities and history, cities and communities. You are listening to MPH Radio.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
And the band played on.
going on in our underserved communities and cities. And what else we'd like to bring in, a special guest for this segment, out of the city of Brother Love. We have with us, I believe, Sister Junior and Mike. We'd like to welcome y'all to MPH Radio. Welcome. Can you hear us, Sister June? Brother McHale?
Oh, yes. Hi, good afternoon, and we do hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, quickly, we just wanted to comment on our experience of the election, the recent midterm elections, to give you maybe the same thing happened down in your neck of the woods, but here in Philadelphia, pretty much the vote was cited by the voters going out and voting along the Democratic line. For me personally, the reason I went out after hearing all the hoopla, whether my vote counted or made a difference, I decided I would go out in my neighborhood and vote along Democratic lines. We retain our Democratic Senator, Bob Casey. Most importantly, we got Wolf in, who is our governor, who I really wanted to put back in because of the policies and things that he's dealt with in the last 2.5 years. But for the most part, in terms of the U.S. House and U.S. Senate, there was kind of an even, well, honestly, the Republicans took the seats, but we gained a few seats in the House where the power or the balance of power is kind of equally divided, and they'll continue to do what they've always done, you know, is fight or whatever. But an experience of in the neighborhood, it was interesting as because of the hoopla and everybody saying get out to vote at my particular precinct. Let's say 2 years ago when I went out to vote, I was like the 37th voter, and same time I went out this year, which was after the 5 p.m. hour, had to wait in a longer line. And I happened to end up being over 225th voter. So for me, that was a small indication that more people were listening and more people are more concerned about our presidency and what's happening in the American consciousness. So my experience this time, well, I have to say it's a little better for the people because even if they don't believe that their congressmen and their senators and everybody can make permanent, positive, sustained change, they're willing to get somewhat in the fight. They're willing to listen and at least know what is going on, in our neighborhoods.
All right, Carla, that's an interesting analysis. Stay with us. And we're going to Washington, D.C. with Brother Moses. Brother Moses, can you tell us what's going on in your underserved community in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, well, you know, the big thing has been the elections. We got the mayor, Bowser, who's getting her second term. And she's come out for a legalization of recreational marijuana, among other things. We'd like to welcome three candidates, Charisse Davis from Kansas, who's the first Native American congresswoman, and then there's Ayanna Pressley, first black congresswoman to represent Massachusetts, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, youngest woman to ever elected to Congress, New York. The elections have been the big thing around here. We're still demonstrating against the war in Yemen. There's activities around the environment and the trying to stop the pipeline, et cetera. But, you know, the elections were the big thing this time around. Thank you.
Okay. You stay put also, Brother Moses, and we're going to now go to Richmond, Virginia, and bring in Brother Hakee. Brother Hakee, what's going on in Richmond, Virginia?
Yeah, so many things going on in Richmond. It's pretty hard to prioritize in terms of the problems. But I think one of the things I think is very, very problematic is the regentrification that's taking place in Richmond. One of the things is a tremendous amount of building taking place in Richmond, but unfortunately, a lot of the developing housing is simply not affordable. And one of the things that we're well aware of is the 2029, the federal government intends to cut all forms of subsidized housing throughout the country. In fact, one of the things that we know is that only four states in the entire country has subsidized housing. So clearly, the need for, you know, subsidized housing is very, very important. But yet, Richmond's struggling very, very much because simply is not receiving the resources traditionally has received from the federal government. I think also one of the things is that in terms of, when we talk about educationally, I think Richmond, in terms of the entire state of Virginia, ranks the school system, ranks at the student rank at the very bottom. And, you know, and that in itself is, you know, it seems to me that that should be concerns among the educators in terms of, you know, the urgency of the situation and the fact that, you know, the city is at the very bottom of the entire state, which means that the livelihoods or the future of these children are not very promising. And so it seems to me that, you know, in terms of outcry, it seems to me the teachers should be at the forefront in terms of articulating what the issues are. And, of course, the issues are many. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of poverty in Richmond. So clearly poverty plays a big role in terms of, minds that are not, properly nourished. So we understand that those play a big role. In addition to that, then you all got a tremendous amount of stress, which is also indicative of poverty. So the kids are up against it. And so the only thing that can remedy the situation is organization. And but first and foremost, you have to define what the problems are. But unfortunately, given the class divide in Richmond, it's very difficult in terms of people coming together to even have these kind of discussions because people, musicians, and prominents are afraid to have these discussions out of fear they may lose their jobs if they engage in these kind of discussions. Not to mention also maybe the class element in which they simply don't care, simply because that kid's going to afford to go to schools in outlying areas. Also, I think aside from gentrification and education issue, I think also the question in terms of, of jobs. I mean, jobs are very, very problematic here in Richmond. And one of the things they do a very good job in the state of Virginia, in particular in Richmond, is that for those individuals who owe child support, what they do is they take their license. The problem with taking their license is to ensure that these individuals can travel to the outlying areas to find employment to take care of their children. So it seems to me it's a policy that's worth forever aware of when you think about in terms of the desire of the criminal justice system to incarcerate more and more people to ensure that corporations have access to more and more profit by working these people for pennies on the hour. So all of these problems are magnified in a city like Richmond because historically Richmond has always been one of those places where the conservative mindset is always dominated. And so unless we can find, you know, more people who are willing to buck the trend, there's a strong tendency to go along with the status quo, which means that it doesn't bode well for the city of Richmond. So we have a tremendous amount of problems here in Richmond.
Okay, brother. Hakee, you still online? We're going to take this caller. The last four numbers, 4953. Welcome to MPH. Your comments or questions. Caller 4953.
How you doing today?
How you doing, caller? Good, good.
Pretty good. Well, since you're talking about elections,
and the city you call from?
This St. Louis area, right now I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. But in St. Louis is a very interesting election.
Okay.
One of the state senators, Claire McCaskill, she was defeated by Josh Howley, a Republican. Two of the three medical marijuana issues passed. And Let's see what else. You had some propositions that didn't pass, like the increased taxes for roads and for policing. I think I'm glad that didn't pass, because I thought that those two should be separate. It shouldn't be together. Had another issue to expand the zoo. It passed. You had a Republican congressperson, Luke Meyer, he won re-election. Lacey Clay is a Democrat, long-standing Democrat. His father was in about 16 years, or actually 32 years. Now he's been in there for at least 16 years. So it's a pretty good election. I myself would have voted. I'm glad that Josh Hawley won, because I think that this present administration needs as much help as they can in order to fill out their initiative. So it wasn't that bad.
Okay, for all my callers who are on, we're talking about, we're trying to get an assessment on what is life like for underserved communities in the various cities. I would like each one of y'all, could y'all speak to the issue of, according to many statistics that has been communicated to the major media, they said the economy is a lot better. It's a lot better. People are working. Do you see that reality taking place in your communities, among your peers? We start with the city of Philadelphia. What's the status like, it's like for the economic condition realities for the underserved community there? Does it reflect what they've been reporting in major media as the economic situation gotten better, people, more and more people's working and people's feeling better about it? Philadelphia, what would be your assessment on that issue?
Peace, this is Mikhail. It's really hard to tell. I do run into more people working at the various big corporations like Amazon, but those are entry-level positions. We do see the same problems in the community in terms of the drug dealing, but that's a very different kind of an issue for this area. But it does seem to be some improvement. What we do lack is a coordinated effort to get the things that we want. In other words, we've been so integrated into the system, and Philadelphia is a Democratic city almost completely. We've basically had nothing but Democrats win, and the rest of the state is Republican. What we need to do is to strategize a way to get some of the things that we need in terms of this gentrification, in terms of education, and so forth. The proposals have been on the line for years, but there's no leadership as far as getting a particular agenda across to the upcoming politicians. So we have a race coming up in 21, and I haven't heard a single suggestion as to how we get the things that we would like to get. In terms of gentrification, it would be easy to put together a program like they had back in the day. We had a Reverend Sullivan, and he started a Progress Plaza. What he did was, and it was a different time, but what he did was get the churches to invest or buy shares in developing a mall. And in that mall are supermarkets and so forth, community businesses and so on and so forth. We could use that same kind of strategic approach to build more of those kinds of opportunity centers. That was the OIC, Opportunity Industrial Corporation, I believe it was. But there's no real movement in that direction. Even in terms of community gardening, there's some support from the city, but there's not a lot of demand from the people as to which direction to go. So we just get swept up in whatever the Democratic Party wants. That's about it.
Okay, thank you. The city of Philadelphia. Let's go to the city of Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C., what is the reality as relates to this whole question of employment is up, people are doing better, and has it have had impact on your underserved communities based upon your assessments?
I haven't seen any indication that that really the situation is getting any better. There's still a lot of unemployment. There's still, you know, gentrification. You know, affordable housing is a problem. We have all sorts of shootings from time to time, which is a problem. You know, the situation, I don't see it getting better, but that's my, I don't have the statistics. I don't know what they're reporting there statistically, whether unemployment rates are up or down. I'm not familiar with the statistics, but just from my observation of people, I don't see much change. I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Washington, D.C. Let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Richmond, Virginia, your response to the same issue of improvement in employment, the improvement in the economy. Have you seen any impact that may have had on your underserved communities there, Richmond?
Yeah, well, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. The bottom line, you know, depending on what statistical facts that you're talking about. So you don't keep two statistical formulas they use in terms of assessing, you know, how well people are doing in terms of employment, the labor market. One of the things, according to the government, if you're employed for, you know, a month, then it's kind of as full employment and it stays on the books. So you get the perception that, in fact, people who only worked a month are, you know, consistently working, when in reality that's not the situation. You know, one of the things we got to understand also, when we talk about the gig economy is not designed for careers. It's only a temporary fix in terms of employment situation. So even though you got places like Amazon, other big factories moving in and people get these assuming jobs, the problem is that the kind of wages that these people pay are not conducive in terms of being able to take care of the rent, take care of things you need for your family and so forth and so on. But nonetheless, it's count as employment. And so what they conveniently do is sidestep this issue in terms of relationship between labor and wages. And so therefore, to simply say that people are working simply doesn't solve the problem, because the reality is that you got a number of people who are considered to working poor. So when we talk about, for all intents and purposes, you know, are people really employed in terms of being able to meet their obligations, including a lot of people unemployed. But again, we talk about two statistical models that they use. One statistical model simply wouldn't count people who don't have jobs or people who are temporarily employed as fully employed. And so therefore, if you use that measurement in terms of how well people are doing in terms of the labor market, then clearly there's a huge gulf between what the government is saying and what really happened in terms of the labor market. I think in terms of just anecdotally speaking, one of the things is that, when you look in terms of situation, particularly, in Richmond, and you look in terms of the situation when it comes to unemployment, nothing has changed, you know, in terms of this one of the people are still unemployed. I mean, yet we're told that the economic situation is doing very, very well. So clearly, this notion that the economy is improving, I think, is very, very funny. Because, in fact, if the economy was improving, in fact, one of the things that should happen is that you would think that the wages will actually fall if you have full employment. Well, that's not what's happening. That's not happening at all. Their position is that wages are increasing. Well, if wages are increasing, then it wouldn't account for the fact that more and more people are working. So clearly, even by their own definitions, they're being disingenuous. They're lying to people in terms of what's really going on in terms of economy. But the bottom line is this, brother. We have to understand that when we talk about the context of capitalism, you got to understand it's all about profitability. You can't have profit with real full employment, with people working. More people unemployed equals higher profitability. And that's what it's all about. And we can't deceive ourselves into falling into the notion about simply because they say employment is good, then everything is good. It's simply disingenuous and not truthful. So I think that we have to understand, in terms of the condition in affecting people, the situation hasn't improved one iota.
We'd like to thank you, Richmond, and we'll go to St. Louis. St. Louis, your response to the reporting by mass media that employment situation is battled throughout the country, and was that has it transcended to your underserved communities there in St. Louis? St. Louis.
Yeah, here in the St. Louis area, and also in the southern Illinois, and some counties around St. Louis, New Madrid and Sedalia. Sedalia is a new corps whose home base is out of North Carolina, is opening the steel mill there in Sedalia, Missouri. You have another company that's opening an aluminum smelting plant in New Madrid, Missouri. In the city of St. Louis, you have several construction projects, structural steel projects that's going on, that's hiring. St. Louis University Medical Center is building a large medical complex out in Clayton, Missouri. They're building a huge hotel accommodation complex. There at the old Pruitt-Igoe site, there's a $1.3 or $1.4 billion project that's going on by defense mapping. I think it's called U.S. Cattle. Then right across the river. And these steel mills are going on because of the tax reform and the tariff. The United States Steel made the announcement back in January or December 2017 that they was starting up the steel mills in Granite City. And these jobs are paying upwards of close to $65,000, that the aluminum plant is paying $65,000 a year, by the way. And in Granite City, which is right next to East St. Louis, they just fired up those furnaces over there, and they're going back to producing steel, which is a good thing. Those tariffs help that a lot when you can start producing steel in the United States. So I commend. Now, you know, another thing, too, I have identified at least 50 manufacturing and production facilities, from furniture, automobiles, Toyota, Mazda. In Kentucky, you got about three more aluminum plants that's opening. You got agriculture ventures in Nashville, Tennessee. You got Hanuk Tire, which is a Chinese firm, which is hiring 1,800 people. You got another one out there on the East Coast, in one of the Carolinas, too. I think it's Triangle Tire Company. They're starting people off at $56,450. So out of this administration, we're seeing quite a bit of that, and, you know, I'm happy to see it. That's one of the reasons I support it.
Okay, caller, on the note, we'd like to thank you, and we'd like to thank all of our reporters for the day on the various cities in terms of what's going on in our cities or communities. And at this point in time, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we'll do an update on what's going on with MPH, and we're going to share with you an article of interest, as it will make up part of our closing for this program. You are listening to MPH.
Lonely place to be, and so I learned to
welcome you back. You are listening to MPH Radio. Yes, we too believe in the children. They are the future. Well, what future will they have if we don't properly prepare them for the day for tomorrow? We welcome you back in closing remarks. Like always on Missing Pages of History, we'd like to share just a little bit with you about what's going on with MPH and how you can support it and find more about the program and the activities that we are pursuing in terms of trying to uplift our underserved communities. Now we'll turn the mic over to Susie.
Hello. I'd like to remind our listeners that we have extended our drawing, which is for, it will be held on November the 24th at 1 o'clock, and you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-8, and there, and you need not be present to hear the raffle. It will be on the radio, and you can listen. That's at 818-337-0016. Also, we also like to remind you that we have our ongoing MPH T-shirt and cap drive, and you can place your orders by going to either our website at www.mphinc.org, or you can give us a call at 804-726-3217 or email us at missingpagesofhistory.inc@yahoo.com. And also we'll continue with our biweekly program, which the next one will be held on November the 24th, and the one after that is December the 8th, and we encourage you to join us on our radio blog program.
And to add to that announcement, we also have an ongoing cap and T-shirt fundraiser drive. For more information, feel free to email us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. Come and purchase your cap and T-shirt as we go out into the communities. We'll be well represented. We need your support. As well as, we also have a process now where you can come and join and help us help be an MPH so we can have a greater impact on our communities. If you are interested in joining MPH in any kind of form, please email us or just go to our website. Check out our website again at www.mphinc.org. We welcome you. And our final thought today is to remind you that every month we will have a question or a quote of the month. We'd like to have your response to it. You can tell us what it means to you. And for this particular program, we ask you, can there be peace without justice? We'd like to hear your feedback right in. We'll choose a winner at the beginning of the first program of each month. Until next time, we'd like to encourage you to continue to strive to go forward and become a positive force in your community. And one of the best ways you can do that is joining an organization. We encourage you to help your MPH. Until next time, we wish the best to you. And remember, always subscribe to go forward backwards double, and come help us fill in our missing pages of history. Because if we don't do it, who will? There are too many pages missing. So if we're going to clear up this confusion that's going on, we must understand the history of our past so we can have a better understanding of the present so we can then be a map of the future for our people and all of humanity. So again, until next time, we'll see you in the next 2 weeks. This is MPH Radio.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force and truth.
Yeah. Lord, it's obvious we got a relationship, talking to each other every night and day. Although you're superior over me, we talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more country. Fast eyes burst into rhythm. Where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walked. Climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came. My family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. My brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask